Setlist in association with 7 Digital.
This week, Spotify, Sky and Ryan Adams. Welcome to Setlist, the music business podcast from CMU. I'm Andy Bolt. With me is Chris Cook. Hello, Chris.
Hello there.
How are you?
I'm good.
We were away last week. I mean, I wasn't away. You were away. That's why there was a special edition in place of a normal episode.
Setlist was away.
Yes. You were in France.
I was in France. Away. Away from London.
Yes. Do you want to elaborate on what you were doing?
Not away from the universe. I still existed as an entity.
Did you?
Just I existed in Cannes rather than London. That was the only difference. But I wasn't in a geographical position compliant with podcast recording, I think is the point, isn't it?
They don't have podcasts in France.
Well, they don't have a studio where both of us can sit. Particularly, well, I'm sure they do.
Probably do.
But not when you're not in France.
I could have been in France.
Well, you should have come.
Well, no one invited me.
Well, you should have made your own way there. Don't wait to be invited. Nothing will happen if you just sit around waiting for other people to invite you.
Just turn up in Cannes.
You just have to show up and make your presence known.
Well, it's all right. I just watched it on YouTube.
Most of the panels are on YouTube.
Yeah.
Including the two sessions I did.
Yes.
My monetizing, hang on, my, what's it called? My music modernization, it's not even monetizing at all. My Music Modernization Act panel.
Yes.
Or the future of American copyright. I can't actually remember what the panel was called. Something like that. I talked about the top five American copyright quirks.
Yep.
The five ways in which American copyright law is weird. So I talked about that for 10 minutes. And then I got five Americans on stage and said, hey, Americans, why is your copyright law so weird? Actually, that's unfair because one of them was Canadian. So it's not her fault. She got a free pass. She can't be blamed for American copyright law being weird. But the other four could be. But they're all trying to get it changed, aren't they? And that was the point of the panel.
You had Dina LaPolt.
We did have Dina LaPolt.
Exciting.
Yes, one of our favourite music lawyers, because she always pursues amusing cases on behalf of her clients.
Well, she works for Deadmau5, and Deadmau5 just likes lawsuits.
So it was a very good panel. You should check it out on the YouTubes. I don't think I was sweating in a visible way during that panel.
So I mean, you didn't look... I found the video of the Turkish TV. It didn't look that bad.
Well, I haven't watched it, so I don't know. So you're allowed to watch my panel at Medem, whereas you're not allowed.
It's not as high res at Medem though, so you can't quite see in quite such good definition.
I suppose the camera,
sweaty or not you are.
Given that the camera, I didn't see the camera, so therefore it can't have been that close.
No.
Whereas obviously in a TV studio, the camera is right in front of you.
Mm.
There. I also interviewed Kara Sherman.
Yeah, I noticed you didn't ask him about this organisation's terrible name, which is, I thought, the only reason you went there.
The RIAA.
Yeah.
Well, no, I didn't. I think I was pretty clear on last week's set list that that was not going to be part of my very short 12-minute conversation with
him. I left here thinking it might still be a possibility.
Well, maybe I'll arrange a special session with the entire RIAA team.
Yep.
In order to discuss maybe finding a new name for the major label's trade body in the United States of America. So that was my Medem. I did some other stuff too, but that's all you need to know. Oh, I went for a very nice dinner, but that's not what we're here to talk about. In the hills it was. It was in a place where, in the olden days, by which I mean about 100 years ago, artists used to stay there. But because artists then, quite like artists now, were usually broke, they used to pay for their board with paintings. And so this little hotel slash restaurant in the hills outside Cannes has all the paintings that they were paid with over the years, including a Picasso. So I'm assuming that that's more than paid for. I mean, it would have to have eaten a lot.
Like that, like Swapigans in Arrested Development. Did anyone try to pay with butter?
No. I'm not sure anymore. Well, I didn't try doing a little drawing and saying, well, I wasn't paying for it, to be frank. Had I been paying, then maybe I would have tried that. So there was all this art everywhere, including lots of artists who I'm sure are very, very famous. I'm not very good at visual art, as we call it, so to distinguish it from all other forms of art. So I don't really know what I was looking at, but I can confirm that the beef was very good.
But then, so that artists didn't have to go and sing for their supper, you came back and did Artist Entrepreneur Day, so they could all make money
and
pay for their food with cash. That's the main aim of it, isn't it?
We did do an Artist Entrepreneur Day, the London edition, because it's a Sounds Like London thing going on this month. So it was part of that at the Islington Assembly Hall. It was really good, and loads of people came. So this is the thing that we've been developing with the Featured Artists Coalition for nearly a year now. In fact, I think the conversation began at MeDem last year, so exactly a year now. So we've done a couple of editions before, but I think this was the first sort of big edition of our Artist Entrepreneur Day, and we have more editions upcoming around the UK. The whole point of the AE Day is that we tour it around the country. So it doesn't matter where you live. If you're always listening to this podcast thinking, that CMU, they keep talking about this stuff they're doing in London, and on the one occasion they're not in London, they're in bloody Cannes.
Yeah.
Fear not, the Artist Entrepreneur Day is going to tour the country, and so we'll have details of our next date very soon. I think by next week's podcast, I will be able to tell you when and where the next edition of the Artist Entrepreneur Day is occurring.
Well, that is exciting.
Anyway, enough plugging.
Yes. Let's talk about stuff we talk about on the podcast. Coming up this week, the music publishers issue an ultimatum to Spain's Songwriters Collecting Society, and Ryan Adams presents the weather. But first, Spotify. This is something that happened in the week we were off.
While I was at MeDem.
While you were swanning around the south of France.
It was raining.
But
when this story broke, it was raining.
It relates to the previous podcast, so we thought we'd include it. Anyway, let's get to it. Spotify has approached some artist managers about licensing music directly from certain acts rather than via a label or distributor, according to sources who spoke to Billboard earlier this month.
And this is now like, well, that story was over a week ago as we record this. And Spotify have not denied it. They've not confirmed it. But I think if it wasn't true, they probably would have come out quickly and denied it.
No, but their share price did shoot up immediately afterwards. So maybe they would have denied it if that hadn't happened.
But now they're thinking, oh, what a good idea. We've got to do this.
Let's hope some journalists make up some other stories
that help our share price go up.
So, although if they don't then do anything, the share price will come down again. Unless maybe investors forget about things.
They do. They have very short memories.
Yes.
So, according to Billboard sources, the proposal here that Spotify has made to a number of artist managers, that number may be one. No, they said managers, so it must be at least two.
Yeah, but they could be two managers managing the same artist.
That is true. It could be a management team for one artist. But the proposal, as reported, is that Spotify would license recordings directly off artists. So the artists would have to be self-releasing their records for them to be able to do that deal. But the idea is, okay, artists, you license us your music directly. So we'll do a direct deal with you. We'll offer you a similar deal to the deal any label or distributor would get, except that the rev share arrangement would be slightly better for Spotify. So whereas most labels and distributors these days are on probably something between 50 and 55% rev share. In the olden days, it was as high as 60, but it's all come down to mid-50s now. So whereas most label distributors are probably on something like a 54, 55% rev share, every deal's different, of course. Mm. Hence why different news stories. When people report on this, they always say, oh, the Spotify rev share is 53%, and then the next article says it's 56%. And people are like, well, which one is right? It's like, well, every deal is different. So it depends which sneaky label person has been leaking this information to the journalist. But apparently, the proposal is that the rev share arrangement would be 50%. Now remember, it's rev share based on consumption share. We haven't got time to go into that now. Buy yourself Dissecting the Digital Dollar. That'll explain how it works.
I'll put a link in, yeah.
Yeah, put a link in the notes. But the key point is that the rev share would be slightly more beneficial to Spotify. However, the pitch is, because this money would be going straight from Spotify to the artist with no label or distributor in between, unless the artist was on a TuneCore type DIY distribution deal where they were getting 100% of the money, even a really good distribution deal, the distributor is probably taking at least 10% of the money and probably more than that. So even though you're taking a few percent less in terms of the money that Spotify is paying, because it's coming directly to you, it's not going through a label, it's not going through a distributor, actually the artist will make more money. And if the artist was considering to do a classic major record company deal, where they would probably be on at best a 20% royalty, so 20% of 55%, well, 100% of 50%, that's going to be way more money.
And this is kind of relevant because this all came out mere days after certain Chris Cook said on the Setlist podcast that Spotify would never, ever, 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 never, ever, 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 ever.
I definitely didn't say that many.
Never, ever.
Nevers.
Never do direct deals with artists.
That is not what I said. Let's clarify that that is not what I said.
But I think it's pretty much what you said.
This does all slot into the ongoing debate about will streaming services ultimately become record companies and or music publishers. So on the last proper edition of Setlist, we were talking about the news that Apple Music were setting up a music publishing department. And loads of people got into excitement that that was Apple Music becoming a music publisher, where what Apple Music meant by a music publishing department was we're hiring some people to talk to music publishers. Yeah. So the opposite of that. And then we said, okay, what about these ongoing speculations that Spotify and Apple will become either record companies or music publishers? And we said, we can't see them ever becoming music publishers because managing publishing rights is a freaking nightmare. As we're going to find out later, you can control all the publishing rights you like. But when it comes to getting money out of Spain, it's a freaking nightmare. So no streaming service wants to become a music publisher. But will they become a record company? And so obviously some of the reporting of this particular rumour is, oh, well, this is Spotify becoming a record company. And therefore, Chris Cook from CMU was wrong to say that that wouldn't happen. That's not what they're saying.
No.
It's what you're saying.
I don't think anyone actually mentioned you.
Well, obviously nobody was listening to that bit of Setlist. Was it the last edition where we talked about the Michael Jackson Disney lawsuit? Was that the last proper edition of Setlist?
Maybe.
I saw someone, a Michael Jackson fan's Twitter feed, linking to our podcast in the last week or so with a go straight to 24 minutes for the Michael Jackson bit.
Should listen to the rest of it.
So perhaps everybody skipped that bit. But some people are saying, okay, is this the first sign of Spotify becoming a record company? But I would sort of stand by what I said on the last proper edition. I keep saying proper edition as if our 20th anniversary specials are some sort of sorry excuse of a podcast. But this isn't really Spotify becoming a record company. This is just Spotify licensing music off artists instead of distributors and labels. Spotify is still doing exactly what it would always do.
Well, yeah, this is still a proposal rather than something they're actively doing as far as we know. But assuming that anyone does go for this deal, they still only be licensing to Spotify. It's not like Spotify would then distribute the music to the other streaming services. So it's one deal between two parties, but the artist still has to do deals with everyone else.
And the artist still needs to create the content. I mean, the other big bit about this proposed deal that we haven't yet mentioned, and I suppose what makes it actually, from a management point of view, quite an exciting proposition, is that as part of these deals, what Spotify is saying is, OK, you license to us directly, accept slightly lower rev share, so we're better off, but you don't have to share the money for label distributor, so you're better off too. And not only that, we will also advance you some money.
Yes.
And possibly quite a lot of money. I mean, like, so the rumour was up to, you know, six-figure advances. And that's what makes this an exciting proposition from an artist management point of view. And I suppose that's what maybe makes some people think, well, that does look like Spotify is becoming a record label because now they're doing advances, and isn't that what labels do? Although streaming services advance money to labels and distributors. So I would say they're just doing exactly what they have always done with labels and distributors. They're just happening to suggest with certain artists that they do it directly with the artists. But they're not becoming record companies. The assumption is that the artist, in essence, is self-releasing the music. They're making the recording. They're leading on the marketing. Whether or not once Spotify had signed these, would there be any marketing kickbacks in the deal as well? Would they say, OK, we'll make sure you get on these playlists, or we'll give you this advertising on the freemium platform? Having said that, they offer that to the labels and distributors as well. So even that would be no different than the deal they're offering everybody else. So in essence, this is just exactly the same deal they offer every label and distributor. It's just offering it directly to artists. And I suppose for artists with savvy management, particularly if they're a little bit more established, so they don't necessarily need a label to go out on a limb and do a massive marketing campaign.
Well, if you're getting a six-figure advance, you're not just a little garage band you set up last week, are you?
Exactly. And I suppose if you are that sort of artist, and maybe your managers have been playing with doing deals with a Cobalt or a BMG or an Orchard or an ADA, so they're not really doing classic label deals, I suppose this takes it to the next level of, okay, what is our distributor bringing to the table? The main thing they're bringing to the table is money. Now, that's not necessarily true, because some distributors are also very good at other things as well, particularly on the marketing side. But if the main reason you're doing your deal with your distributor is to get access to cash flow, well, this is very attractive, because now we have another route of cash flow. And with this route, okay, we're taking a slightly lower royalty from Spotify, but overall, we're going to make more money because we're not paying 20% to distributor. So it's a very attractive deal. But I stand by my point that, in essence, this is just Spotify making its existing licensing deals available directly to artists. And the other thing I would say about advances, when we did the deals guide for the Music Managers Forum last year, and we sort of laid out the 10 different deal types. It is certainly true that if this happens, we will need deal type 11 in the MMF deals guide, which is annoying because 10's a nice round number. 11 wouldn't be very good, would it?
Well, you can just pretend that one doesn't exist anymore.
I could just knock one out. Or 12 I can live with. So maybe we'll have to find somebody somewhere will have to come up with another new deal type so that my deals guide can have 12 and not a horrible number 11. But when we did a deals guide last year, and I was talking to lots of managers in order to inform that, labels offer advances to artists and distributors offer advances to artists. So upfront cash on the table. And depending on the level of the artist, they can be quite a lot of money, both label advances and distribution advances. But it does sort of feel like there is a difference between a label advance and a distribution advance. And that's not just how much money is being advanced. Generally, with a distributor, when they're advancing, what a distributor would do is they would look at your streaming stats for last year and they might say, okay, your music last year brought in $5,000. So, you know, a newer artist. So last year you brought in $5,000 in streaming. So why don't we advance you $5,000 now? Because we're pretty certain we'll make that back in the next 12 months, assuming your music is still listened to the same. Plus, you can use that $5,000 to do some marketing. And hopefully by doing that marketing, you'll ramp up your fan base a little. So maybe this year you'll bring in $8,000. And then next year, we'll advance you the $8,000. You could use more marketing and so on and so forth. And that's the sort of advancing that distributors do, which is different than a classic record deal where a label might say to an artist, okay, last year you brought in $5,000 on streaming. So why don't we advance you $20,000 and commit to spend $30,000 on marketing? So $50,000 investment. So that's 10 times more than you made last year. But by doing so, we're going to really ramp up your fan base so that hopefully next year you'll bring in $20,000 in streaming. So 3, 4, 5 years time, we'll break even. And that's sort of what labels are doing. So there's a lot more risk involved when a label is advancing rather a distributor. And my suspicion is, in terms of offering these advances, particularly these six-figure advances, Spotify will be advancing more like a distributor than a label. I could be wrong.
It's happened before.
But I would be surprised if Spotify is going to brand new artists who have seen a couple of grand of streaming revenue on Spotify in the last year, and they're saying, here, have $120,000 and licenses your music. I would suspect it's going to be much more based on, okay, we can see what you brought in last year. We are pretty confident that even if it takes us 3 years to make this back, this is not a hugely risky investment. So we are advancing to you in much the same way we'd advance to a label and a distributor. You know, the advance we pay is based, particularly once you're up and running and established and you're not trying to sweeten the deal, the advance we pay is pretty informed on what we think you're probably going to make in the next 12 months anyway. So I wasn't wrong on the other edition of Setlist, where we talked about whether or not Spotify will become a record company. But this is a very interesting proposal, as I say, if we're assuming that it is true, which I think we are. And it would be really interesting to find out what kinds of artists, as you say, six-figure advances, that sounds like we're talking pre-established artists.
Yeah.
Probably artists who've had a label deal, they're out of that deal, and they're thinking about, well, do we work with a distributor or a new label moving forward? And this is Spotify saying, well, why don't you come with us? We'll advance you the money. Now you don't need an advance from a distributor. And then you just pick a, you know, another distributor to get it to all the other streaming services. And you could do it on a TuneCore, couldn't you? And keep 100% of the money if you've already had your advance from Spotify.
Yeah. Although, I mean, if Spotify does this and it proves successful, do you think that the other streaming services might follow suit and do similar?
Well, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? And so then you would be providing the content to each of them separately. And then you might be saying to Spotify, OK, would you advance us $20,000? Apple, would you advance us $10,000? That puts more strain on management. All these innovative new ways of doing business invariably put more strain on management. Because if it was a case of going around multiple services and collectively getting in the budget, well, that's a lot more work, it's a lot more legal, it's a lot more admin than just going to one place and getting the money. Plus, of course, you know, as I say, it's wrong to think that distributors and especially labels are just bringing money to the table. They're not. They're bringing marketing and contacts and A&R and creativity, etc., etc. And it's all of those things which I don't really see the services anytime soon being in a position to offer those extra services beyond marketing kickbacks and data from their own platforms. The rumour was that these Spotify deals are not looking for any sort of exclusivity. So it's not like what Apple and Tidal have been doing where they're looking to get exclusivity. So therefore, in theory, you could go and do these deals with every single platform if you wanted to. But that would be more work for management and it would be more legal costs associated with that. So quite whether or not that would work for managers, I'm not sure.
Well, we're still to see Spotify even do one of these deals. So we'll find out whether anyone goes for this.
Or indeed, if there is a this to go for. given that we are yet to actually have confirmation from Spotify that this is genuinely a deal on the table and it's not just something that somebody somewhere has floated without sign-off from higher up. But you mentioned the Spotify share price has gone up. What is it currently standing at?
Well, it was going up pretty steadily after this. It peaked on the 12th of June at just under $176. It's dropped a little bit now as we record this. It's almost $171. I think that still puts us up about $20 on our share.
Yeah, speaking of Spotify shareholders, we're all for, even if they're untrue stories, that send the share. Well, I'm getting very close to being accused of insider trading there. We won't be publishing any untrue stories in a bid to try and rally the Spotify share price up, because that would be insider trading, and that's not the sort of thing we do. But yeah, if we'd sold it on Tuesday, we could have definitely had lunch. Yeah. I mean, not a particularly flashy lunch. Not lunch on the seafront in Cannes, for certain. But maybe that place up in the hills outside Cannes, if we'd thrown in a little doodle as well, they would have given us a nice beef dinner for that. Who knows?
Well, I guess, we haven't sold it, and now the share price is dropping again. So until the next made-up, possibly, story, we'll just have to wait for our lunch.
Or get better at doodling.
Yeah. Still to come, some news in brief and Ryan Adams with the weather. But now, frustrated at the progress or lack of it in action being taken against Spanish collecting society Sky, the International Confederation of Music Publishers said last week that its members might be forced to seek alternative ways to license their rights in the country if nothing happens soon.
As I think we've probably mentioned before when we talked about the controversies around Sky, S-G-A-E, we're not talking about Sky TV here, I think sometimes when you say Sky, it's a G. Listen to the
definite G
in the middle. The last time we were talking about this, I think we talked about the fact that, you know, the International Federation of Music Publishers is not an organisation that usually comes out with firm, angry statements. And yet, you know, the anger level is going up, which I think tells you how serious they see this issue.
Yes, because the last statement was surprising. This one, this is particularly firm.
So the Spanish equivalent of PRS has been subject to various controversies over the years, but the most recent controversy relates to the way that they distribute TV royalties. So money comes in to the society from Spanish TV networks, and then each society has its own rules as to how that money gets distributed. And the various allegations are that there's this scam that they call the wheel. So the wheel is still spinning.
Yep.
So there's this scam called the wheel, and the allegation is that certain Sky members have colluded with certain Spanish broadcasters so that those broadcasters play those specific Sky members' music either overnight when nothing's actually going out on the TV networks, or, we have talked about this on the podcast before, the hilarious one, they sync them into TV programmes, but then they put the music down to zero in the mix. So it's a silent sync. So there's allegations that all of this stuff's going on in order to allow certain Sky members to take a bigger portion of TV royalties than perhaps they are due. So this has been going around for ages. There was a police raid related to this. The World Intellectual Property Organization has investigated this. And CISAC, the Global Collective for Collecting Societies, has been investigating on this. And the big music publishers, the global music publishers, have been hitting out at this and saying, this is wrong. Hey, Sky, you need to sort this out. And then last year, there was a bit of a falling out because the solution, Sky's solution to these global publishers being angry, was to exclude them from the board meeting.
Yes.
Which also got the ICMP angry. And so basically, the statement coming out this week is, this is still a problem. It still hasn't been resolved. Something needs to happen kind of now, is what the publishers were saying.
The ICMP in their latest statement said, if this isn't sorted now, we're going to find other ways to license music in Spain.
Yeah, quite what that would be, they were a little bit vague about. I mean, when it comes to song rights, you have all sorts of complexities because, of course, in continental Europe, the writer actually assigns most of the rights in their songs, the performing rights, the mechanical rights, to the society, and then allies with a publisher who administrates those rights and takes the publisher's share of the money coming through the society. But what that means is when it comes to the continental European repertoire, it's not just as easy as music publishers saying, right, that's it, we're pulling all the rights out of the collective, because they're not really their rights just to pull out like that. So they would have to collaborate with the songwriters in order to be pulling out sort of certainly their Spanish repertoire. Having said that, in Spain, particularly things like TV, Sky is representing the global repertoire through its reciprocal agreements with all the other societies around the world. So maybe there's a little bit of room for maneuver there. With the Anglo-American repertoire, which I guess, you know, is all important on a global level, particularly across the rest of Europe, the publishers do control the mechanical rights, although, well, with TV Sync, actually, there is a little bit of mechanical copying in addition to the communication. So when it comes to Anglo-American repertoire, the publishers probably do have more power. But exactly what they would do, they were a little bit unclear about, although you sort of sensed that they are still hoping that CISAC, the organisation that glues all the collecting societies around the world together on the song side, and through which all of these reciprocal agreements are negotiated, I think they're still hoping that CISAC can kick Sky into action. CISAC did then put out quite a long statement of their own in response to this.
Yes, they did. To summarise the statement, it was basically, chill, it's fine, we're sorting it out. That's basically what they said.
That's your summary. It had more substance than that, in that it updated what has happened in recent weeks and months.
They said, look, we've been conducting an investigation, and that's why nothing seems to have happened. But we finished that at the end of last month, and various recommendations came up in that report. And we've gone to Sky, and we said, here are the recommendations, you should implement these. And Sky's gone, cool, yeah, we'll do that. And now we're working together to make sure that happens. And they've put a deadline on it that Sky has to implement these recommendations, which include letting the excluded publishers back into its meetings, yeah, by a certain point. Otherwise, there will be sanctions.
Although at the same time, some of the specific complaints raised by the ICMP, the music publishers, Sky is disputing, and they're citing rulings that have happened recently in the Spanish courts as saying, actually, Spanish law is on our side. Meanwhile, the Spanish government have also started to intervene. They've asked Sky to hand over this CISAC report. They've asked for an update on what Sky are going to do in terms of changing their own constitution and their distribution rules. The European law that came in a few years ago, actually, about regulating collective licensing has finally been implemented in Spanish law. So that's partly to do with the controversy and partly to do with checking that Sky is now compliant with the new Spanish laws, which are implementing existing European law. So they are under pressure from multiple sides. Although Sky are saying, we're reforming our constitution, we're reforming some of our codes, we're listening to CISAC, they aren't saying, we will do everything the music publishers want. They're still pushing back on some of this.
Yes.
So I think everyone will be watching this as it develops closely in the next few weeks. But I suspect that even if a bit of reform happens, even if they sort of comply with CISAC's demands, that the publishers could still have some issues with the Spanish society. And it would be interesting to know whether behind the scenes they have any concrete proposals of if we just cannot get to a position where we are happy with collective licensing in Spain, particularly when it comes to non-Spanish repertoire, particularly when it comes to the Anglo-American repertoire. Are there other options? And that would depend a little bit on Spanish copyright law. It would depend a little bit on just how far the publishers are willing to go to, in essence, blow up the collective licensing system. Because it's interesting with the collecting societies. They all collaborate around the world. Although in recent years, they've all started competing around the world. So you have a slightly interesting situation where societies are officially all best friends, but then behind the scenes, they're all sort of competing against each other. So it does sort of feel like the collective licensing system does need some quite radical reform somewhere. So maybe this will sort of be the impetus to do that. Or maybe ultimately over the summer, Sky will maneuver sufficiently that the publishers will step back from the brink and see how it goes for another year or so. I guess we'll see.
Just quickly, time for some news in brief now. There's been a Supreme Court ruling on web blocking costs that shouldn't affect music cases. So I don't know if we really need to talk about it. What's happened?
You put it on the list.
I did.
This is the UK Supreme Court, we should stress.
Yes.
I mean, maybe that should be a given, given we're a British podcast. Although normally when we're talking about Supreme Court, perversely, we're talking about the American Supreme Court. But hey, we have one too.
Yeah.
Americans. We have a Supreme Court. And this was to do with good old web blocking, which we've talked about a lot on Setlist and certainly written about a lot in the CMU Daily. And the question was, when web blocks are introduced, so that's when a court tells the internet service providers that they have to start blocking certain websites because those websites are facilitating IP infringement, who should pay for the cost of doing that? Should the ISPs pay for that, or should the rights owners pay for it? And in this Supreme Court ruling that came out last week, they concluded that the rights owners should pay for it, but never fear, because this was a trademark case, not a copyright case. So all the original web blocks were for copyright infringing websites. Then a few years ago, there was a test case of whether or not web blocks could be secured when it is trademark infringement rather than copyright infringement. It was decided that it could be, but this case was specifically about trademark, not copyright. So the BPI, which represents record companies, which has got plenty of web block injunctions of its own in place on the copyright side, is saying, although we're a bit disappointed with this ruling, it shouldn't affect us because this precedent should only apply to trademark blocks, not copyright blocks. So yes, that was a quite long-winded explanation of a story, the conclusion of which is nothing's happened.
Something that has happened, Fyre Festival founder Billy McFond has been arrested on new fraud charges, and given that he was waiting for sentencing this week as the podcast goes out on the previous fraud charges that he was convicted of, that's not very good.
Yeah, so you remember the Fyre Festival last year? It was the luxury music festival in the Bahamas that collapsed just as it was starting, when it turned out that the people organising it couldn't organise, I don't know, coffee morning, let alone this big luxurious festival that they'd been promising. The business behind it then fell apart. There have been so many lawsuits against this Billy McFarland and also his celebrity co-founder, Ja Rule. But Billy McFarland himself was then arrested on allegations of fraud, that he had misled various investors and backers in the festival and various other spin-off businesses that were going to be part of it. And so that was where we were waiting for the sentencing. His lawyers agreed a plea deal with the prosecutors. We were waiting for all that to go through. But interestingly, these new charges are not actually to do with the festival.
No, it's based on the Fyre Festival mailing list. The accusation is that he's been attempting to sell non-existent VIP tickets to big events to people who bought tickets for Fyre Festival and therefore is defrauding them. He denies these charges. His lawyer in court last week said that it was a former colleague trying to frame him. But, I mean, if he is convicted of this, it's another accusation of fraud, two more accusations of fraud. He's already facing potentially a 40-year prison sentence. There's at least another 20 more on top of that if he gets convicted of these charges. He initially pleaded not guilty to the original fraud charges, and then he changed to a guilty plea in February in order to get the prosecutors to recommend a shorter sentence, 8 to 10 years rather than 40. Presumably that would go out the window if he's convicted of more fraud charges. All his sentencing has been placed on hold while they await further investigation into these new charges. So, yeah, it's not going very well for him right now.
As you say, his lawyers are denying these new allegations and saying that it's all somebody else who's been doing that. I mean, he would be an idiot, given that...
These emails started going out in December, I think. They were at least as recently as December, if not more recently, which is while his trial for fraud was going on. So, yeah, it would be incredibly stupid.
So we wait to see what happens with these new allegations.
Sticking in the pop courts, a very long-running case, the Dancing Baby case, maybe coming to an end.
Yeah, so 11 years this has been working its way through the system. It's basically testing the good old safe harbour and the takedowns that come with safe harbour and whether or not the American principle of fair use must be considered before the takedowns are issued. It's been going through the system for so long now. We call it the Dancing Baby case because it all relates to a video that was posted to YouTube back in the early days of YouTube of a baby, or a toddler really, dancing to a Prince track. And then Prince's then publisher, Universal Music Publishing, tried to have it removed. So sort of a classic copyright case that's been slowly working its way through the system. And there have been various rulings in various courts. There are still a few disputes between the woman who uploaded this video and Universal Music Publishing. But the latest development is a note issued by the court overseeing this case suggesting that some sort of out-of-court settlement is close to being reached that would draw a line under all of it.
So you can find links to read more on all of those stories and everything we've discussed this week at setlistpodcast.com. And finally this week, Ryan Adams has been presenting the weather on TV in Denver, which I think everyone involved, including him, agreed was weird.
Although he did say he'd always wanted to present the weather.
Yes, but he did also say it was weird.
I've always wanted to present the travel news on a radio station. I think I'd be quite good at the travel news.
We could put travel news as a feature on this show.
Yeah, I've always quite liked the idea of doing travel news. So, this Ryan Adams doing the weather, this was actually the final chapter in a little string of events, but it happened because he had asked a presenter for this TV station. Well, he'd basically written a song begging to do the weather.
Yeah, I mean, there's a convoluted backstory to this. Basically, it relates to the fact that, well, today, as we record, Ryan Adams is playing the Red Rock Amphitheatre in Colorado. I think he's not touring this year. He's just doing this kind of his one big show of the year. So he's got more time to promote it in weird ways. And it all started, he wrote a song for a radio station called The Colorado Sound. That seemingly came out of the blue. Someone from the radio station was interviewed by a local newspaper called Westword and said it was weird. Someone rang us up and said, Ryan Adams got an idea for a song about your radio station. Would you like him to record it? And they said, yeah, okay. And then this song turned up.
Do you think it was as good as the Signal Radio song?
Nothing is as good as the Signal Radio. No, it's not as good.
Have you heard it?
What, the Signal Radio song?
No. The song he wrote about
the
radio station.
Oh, the song he wrote. Yeah. No, of course it's not the Signal Radio song.
No Cheshire's favourite, Staffordshire's favourite.
No.
I'm going to email him the Signal Radio song and say, next time you start writing songs about local media, take your inspiration from
Well, give him that was only his first attempt. Because then once Westword had interviewed the Colorado Sound about what happened, then Westword was in his brain. He happened to be watching the TV series of Westworld. And he thought, there's something I could do there. And he recorded a version of the Westworld theme tune, but for Westword, with lyrics about the newspaper.
So now, in order to promote this gig, he's written a song about the local radio station. He's written a song about the local newspaper. So I suppose the local TV station was the obvious other one.
Yes, a presenter on Denver TV station, Denver 7, Shannon Ogden, tweeted Adams to point out that lots of things rhyme with Denver 7 and Shannon. So Adams tweeted that he accepted the challenge and then a few days later sent over a song called Denver 7, Piece of Heaven, in which, he basically spends 3 minutes begging to be allowed to present the weather. One line towards the end goes, Shannon, you got your wish. Here is your song. Let me be the guest weather person. What could possibly go wrong?
And so they responded and said, all right then,
yep,
come and present the weather. Did anything go wrong?
I don't know if it went wrong. It was just odd. It's a slick US TV news thing. So it's three presenters sitting around in suits and then Ryan Adams. In the song, he says he'll wear a Batman T-shirt and a flannel shirt. And so
For purposes of rhyming.
Yeah, and there he is on there in his sunglasses with them asking about it, saying, this is your lifelong dream, isn't it, to present the weather? Him saying, yeah, ever since I saw the movie Twister. And then he gets to present the weather and I don't think they really explain what he's supposed to do beyond, like, look at this screen and say stuff. So he just sort of reads out what's on the screen. And then they go, now we've got a special weather forecast for your show tomorrow night. And they flash up some of his lyrics from his song Dirty Rain, which is about basically saying, oh, there's not going to be any rain. So that's the forecast.
Oh, so there's a gag at the end.
There's a gag at the end, which then they tried to convince him to sing the words, but then the actual weather presenter comes on. So used, obviously, he's to pointing at the blank screen behind him, because obviously it's all green screen. He says, why don't you read these lyrics out, pointing behind him? And so Ryan Adams just turns around and is like, there's nothing there. It's all green.
It's a green screen.
So he never does sing the lyrics.
In his song to the TV station, he acknowledges the fact that with a weather forecast, the presenter's standing in front of a green screen.
Yeah.
So he should have known that was going to happen.
His lyrics. But sometimes the reality of a situation is, it just takes you by surprise, doesn't it?
But he didn't sing the weather forecast.
No.
Because there was some singing and there was some rapping in one of these songs, I think.
In the song for Denver 7, yes, there was a bit of rapping. He described it as a smooth rap song, although there was more singing than rapping.
But you could rap the weather. That would be quite straightforward. He should have rapped the weather. So he's done the radio station, he's done the newspaper, he's done the TV station. As you say, by the time this podcast goes out, I suppose the gig will have happened.
So there's no point doing any more.
You have to assume that that's now the line drawn. Although, wherever his next show is, so as you say, he's not actively touring at the moment, but wherever his next show is, that's sort of a precedent set now. All the local media will be on the socials saying, where's our song?
Yeah, it's unfortunate for him now. He's going to never live this down.
You can come on and do the travel news if you write as a song for our radio station. So yes, every single town he plays in from now for the rest of his career, he will have to be writing. But I have to say, if he ever does play Stoke-on-Trent, he's going to struggle to write a song for the Signal Radio that's better than the Signal song.
Well, that's a challenge laid down for him, and we'd better let him get on. I'm wrapping this up now like he's listening to this, which I'm sure he is. Ryan, we're going to end the podcast now so that you can go and attempt to write a song even half as good as the Signal Radio song, which you won't.
That's assuming that your agent books you in to play something. I don't know what venues are in Stoke-on-Trent these days. I'm sure we can get him to play
Sugar
Stoke
Mill?
In order for him to be able to have that opportunity.
Is the Sugar Mill in Stoke?
I want to say yes.
I think it is. I don't think it's big enough for him. But that's my knowledge of venues in Stoke exhausted. So anyway, that's all we've got time for this week. You can get in touch with us on social media if you want to debate any errors that Chris has inserted into this week's show. Or you could email us at length, setlist@unlimitedmedia.co.uk. If you enjoyed this show and didn't find any errors in it, why don't you just write about it on the internet all over the place, or walk up to people in the street and tell them about it and, you know, get the word out. Setlist is the music business podcast from CMU. That's a thing you could say to them. It's presented by Andy Moult and Chris Cook, produced by Matt Peaty. It's edited by Jason Wolfe. And for more on CMU, go to completemusicupdate.com.
Recorded at unique facilities, Setlist is an Unlimited production.